All right, welcome aboard, everyone, for another deep dive. This time, we're going deep into a maritime law case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. ExxonCo v. SOFEC, Inc., 1996.
Classic case.
Yeah, it's a real nail-biter involving, you know, a massive oil tanker, rough seas, equipment failure, all culminating in some pretty tough decisions for the captain involved.
Definitely high stakes.
Absolutely. And the question we're going to try to answer for you today is, you know, when you have an accident at sea, right, it's this mix of things. Like, you've got equipment breaking down, and then you have potential human error. Who's ultimately on the hook legally?
Right.
Like, can you still point the finger at someone else, even if your own actions seem to be the most immediate cause of what went wrong?
A question that comes up all the time in maritime law. And thankfully, we've got a pretty solid set of materials to help us sort this out. Detailed case briefs, some really insightful legal analysis, and of course, we've got our own notes breaking down the key legal concepts. So the goal for us today is to really pull all of this together and give you a clear picture of how maritime law figures out who's responsible when things go sideways.
Perfect. So let's set the scene, right? It's March 1989. The Exxon Houston, a huge oil tanker, is in Hawaii to, well, deliver oil, as tankers do.
As they do.
And it's hooked up to this underwater pipeline using something called a single point mooring system, or SPM for short. Think of it like a specialized anchoring point combined with the connection point for the oil pipeline.
Right. A single buoy that serves as both the mooring point and the offloading point. Very efficient.
Yeah, exactly. And this particular SPM, it was owned and operated by, you guessed it, SOFEC, Inc. So then things take a turn. A storm rolls in. And during this storm, the chain that connects the tanker to the SPM, you know, the chafe chain, it snaps.
Yeah.
Huge problem. Now you've got this enormous tanker just adrift. And as it drifts, the oil hoses that connect it to the SPM, they start breaking away, except one.
There's always one.
Right. And this one hose, it just stays attached. It's incredibly long, like 800 feet. So now you've got this massive tanker drifting in a storm with this giant hose dragging behind it, basically making it almost impossible to steer. Imagine the pressure on the captain at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Talk about a maritime nightmare. And this initial failure, the chafe chain breaking, that's the cornerstone of Exxon's case against SOFEC. They're basically saying, hey, you guys were responsible for maintaining a safe mooring system, and it failed. And that started this whole mess.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned, it doesn't end there. The captain's actions after the breakout, those become the real focus.
Right. And that's where Captain Kevin Coyne comes in. He's the captain of the Exxon Houston, and he's suddenly dealing with this incredibly chaotic situation, trying to regain control of this massive drifting tanker. The decisions he made during those critical moments, those are what make this case so interesting. So the district court, when they looked at all of this, they came to a pretty significant conclusion. They found that Captain Coyne's actions in trying to handle this emergency actually amounted to what they called extraordinary negligence.
Wow. Extraordinary negligence. That's not just, you know, everyday negligence.
Exactly. They're really pointing a finger here. And they said that this negligence was the sole proximate cause of the tanker running aground on a coral reef, which, of course, led to oil spills and environmental damage.
Ouch. So not only are they saying the captain messed up, but they're also saying that his actions were the only direct reason for the damage.
Right. And it's important to note here that the district court did something interesting procedurally. They bifurcated the trial, meaning they first looked exclusively at whether Exxon's own negligence through the captain's actions prevented them from recovering any damages before even considering whether SOFEC was also at fault for the SPM failing in the first place. It's like they wanted to isolate Exxon's actions and determine if they were solely responsible.
Interesting strategy. And it makes sense, because if Exxon's own negligence was the sole proximate cause, then whatever SOFEC might have done wrong with the SPM system becomes irrelevant in terms of Exxon getting any money from them.
Exactly. So even after this ruling from the district court, Exxon decides to go after SOFEC anyway. They sue them for negligence and breach of warranty related to the SPM system. Yeah. Basically, they're arguing, hey, even if our captain messed up, your broken equipment started this chain reaction and you should be held accountable.
Makes sense. They're trying to shift some of the blame back to SOFEC.
Right. But both the district court and then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they weren't buying it. They both sided with SOFEC, upholding this idea that Captain Coyne's negligence was the superseding cause of the grounding, meaning it overrode any potential fault on SOFEC's part.
So the focus stays on the captain.
It does. And this brings us to the really big legal question that ended up in front of the Supreme Court. Do the legal principles of proximate cause, which is basically the idea that harm has to be a direct and foreseeable result of someone's actions, and superseding cause, which is when something happens in between that breaks that chain of cause and effect, do those even apply in maritime law? And maybe even more importantly, can someone be held responsible for damages when their own negligence, not someone else's, was the ultimate cause?
Tough questions. Yeah. And the answers have huge implications for pretty much any maritime case where you have multiple factors contributing to an accident.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court, they came back with a clear answer. They said, yes, proximate cause and superseding cause, those absolutely apply in admiralty law. And to really drive the point home, they also said that a plaintiff, someone who's suing, they can't recover damages if their own negligence was the sole and superseding cause of their injury.
In other words, if you messed up so badly that it trumps everything else, you're not getting any money, even if someone else also screwed up.
Right. It sounds straightforward, but the fact that it went to the Supreme Court means there was a lot of debate about it and a lot of money at stake.
And the Supreme Court's reasoning behind this decision is really important. They emphasize that these legal doctrines, they're not just legal technicalities, they serve a purpose. They're there to limit liability, even in a system like maritime law, where we have comparative fault.
So a quick refresher for our listeners, comparative fault is basically a system where if multiple parties are at fault in an accident, the responsibility for damages gets split up based on how much each party was at fault.
Right. Like if I'm 20% responsible for the accident and you're 80% responsible, then we each pay for damages according to those percentages. But the Supreme Court is making a clear distinction here. They're saying that comparative fault only applies when we're talking about the actions of parties whose negligence was a proximate cause of the injury. If someone's negligence is the sole proximate cause because of a superseding event, then comparing fault becomes irrelevant for the purpose of getting damages from the other party.
Got it. So if someone's actions are so far outside the norm, so negligent that they basically become the only legal cause of the harm, then we don't even bother comparing fault. And that brings us to the superseding cause test. Now, the Supreme Court didn't explicitly lay this out as a step-by-step test, but it's implied in their decision, and it's super helpful for understanding what they're getting at. Basically, for an intervening act to be considered a superseding cause, it generally needs to meet three criteria. First, it has to be extraordinary, meaning it goes beyond ordinary negligence. It has to be something pretty egregious. Second, it has to be unforeseeable. It can't be something that a reasonable person would have anticipated as a consequence of the initial wrongdoing. And third, it has to be the sole proximate cause. It has to completely break the chain of causation so that the initial act is no longer legally connected to the final harm.
Okay, so it's a pretty high bar to clear.
It is. And when the Supreme Court applied this framework to Captain Coyne's actions, they agreed with the lower courts. They basically said that the captain's decisions in trying to control the tanker after the mooring broke were so palpably unreasonable, strong words, that they completely severed any connection between anything Sofec might have done wrong with the SPM system and the tanker ultimately running aground. They pointed out that the captain had other options, like dropping anchor, which he didn't do, and that his maneuvering of the tanker, in their view, was the decisive factor that caused the damage. It's almost like if a pilot makes a huge mistake after a plane has some initial mechanical issue, the focus shifts to that pilot error.
Yeah, that makes sense. The initial problem becomes secondary if the pilot's actions are what actually caused the crash.
Right. And Justice Thomas, who wrote the majority opinion for the Supreme Court, he really hammered this home with a very clear statement. He said, a party whose fault did not proximately cause the injury is not liable at all. So basically, even if Sofec's equipment was faulty, if Captain Coyne's actions were the sole legal reason for the grounding and the damage, then, legally speaking, Sofec isn't responsible for paying anything.
Crystal clear.
Absolutely. Now, this ruling, it has some pretty big implications for maritime law. First off, it really highlights how important proximate cause is as a defense strategy. If you're defending someone in a maritime case and you can successfully show that the plaintiff's own actions were the superseding cause of their damages, that can be a really powerful way to get your client off the hook, even if they were initially involved in the chain of events.
Yeah, it basically shifts the whole legal focus.
It does. And there's another interesting point that came up in our background materials. It's this idea that foreseeability might be looked at differently in contract claims versus tort claims. You know, Exxon sued Sofec for both breach of warranty, which is a contract issue, and negligence, which is a tort. But the Supreme Court's focus on how extraordinary and unforeseeable Captain Quain's negligence was, that seemed to apply to both types of claims in this case. So it suggests that the standard for proving a superseding cause might be pretty consistent in both contract and tort cases in maritime law, at least in situations like this one.
Interesting point. And a good reminder that these legal concepts often overlap and interact in complex cases.
They do. And at the end of the day, this case is a really great example of how comparative fault, proximate cause, and superseding cause, how they all work together in admiralty law. It's not a situation where comparative fault just wipes out the need to figure out who caused the harm. It's more nuanced than that. What the Supreme Court is saying is, yes, we'll divvy up responsibility based on fault when multiple parties' actions are proximate causes. But first, we have to figure out who legally caused the injury. If the plaintiff's own extreme negligence is the only proximate cause, then the analysis stops there as far as getting money from other potentially negligent parties.
Got it. So it's not just about who is more at fault. It's about who ultimately triggered the chain of events that led to the damage.
Exactly. So the key takeaway for our listeners is this. In maritime law, even if someone else might have initially contributed to a problem, maybe their equipment failed or something, if your own actions in response to that situation are considered super negligent and become the direct sole cause of the damage, you could be held entirely responsible. Exxon v. Sofec is a really strong reminder that maritime law puts a huge emphasis on acting responsibly and reasonably, even when you're dealing with emergencies at sea. You know, when things go wrong, you can't just throw your hands up and say, well, it's not my fault because someone else's equipment failed. You still have a duty to act prudently.
Makes sense. But it does raise an interesting question, something for our listeners to ponder. Given how stressful and unpredictable the maritime environment can be, how do we define extraordinary negligence? Is this ruling enough to encourage people in the industry to be extra careful and get the best training? Or does it maybe risk letting some parties off the hook too easily by setting the bar really high for what counts as inexcusable human error in an emergency?
Yeah, great point. Lots to think about there. So, the next time you're thinking about the legal complexities of maritime accidents, remember that even out on the open ocean, your own actions can really determine your legal fate.
Wise words.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.